This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the LAPD makes headlines again for alleged police brutality, and Ken Millman steps down as head of the RNC. Joining us today from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., we've got Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, Political Activism, Leadership, and Hip-Hop Culture. And from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Callie Crossley, social-cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. Plus, in our New York bureau, where I happen to be today, Robert George, editorial writer for the New York Post. So welcome, everyone. And Robert, since you're sitting right here with me, what do you think about Senator Harry Reid and his comments on the African-American vote on Harold Ford?
Well, first of all, Farai, it's so nice to see you face to face.
I know.
Quite a while. That's great. Well, I think, as Mr. Trainum said, it's probably better to actually take Harold Ford at his word. I mean, obviously, he's going to be he wants to maintain his own political viability in the future, so he's not going to want to make too many waves. But you have to keep in mind, he lost by three percentage points. Given that Tennessee is still a pretty heavily red state, I think Ford did that is about that is about the kind of margin you would expect for a general Democratic output in a red state, and so I think you should be very cautious about saying it has to be about race that he lost.
Callie, do you think that Ford was just being politic about that, and really secretly, you know, at home at night he's like, you know what, it's race. Race did it. Or is it? Should we take him at his word?
Well, I think that Robert has put his finger on it, and that former Congressman Ford would like to be a little bit politic about it and look forward. But I am from Memphis, Tennessee. It's about race, period. That's it.
All right.
Tell us how you really feel.
All right, Yvonne, what do you think?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that Harold Ford certainly doesn't probably feel he has the latitude to really be candid about what was going on. But I think we are still dealing with the South, despite what Harry Reid said. Race plays a big role in how we engage, even in the political arena. And I think that that ad with the quote-unquote bimbo, I think that had undertones of race. So I personally feel people who were going to vote for Harold Ford voted for them. People who were not going to vote for him didn't. I don't know that the ad itself had much impact, but the fact that it even existed is an issue.
I think we should keep in mind too that not only obviously Harold Ford is black, he's single and he's 36 years old. My feeling of that particular ad was that they were trying to portray him as somewhat immature, not quite ready to become senator. And I think it is in that context that that was what the main message of that ad was, more so than race.
But they were trying to say he was a hypocrite, that he's talking about, you know, high moral values
and
the church, and then here he is at the Playboy party. So I think it was, certainly that was part of it as well.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about something else that that Robert Trainum brought up after we spoke, after we heard from Senator Harry Reid. The black vote. The black vote, once again, overwhelmingly going for the Democrats. And Robert Trainum mentioned RNC Chair Ken Millman as someone who tried to reach out to the African-American community. Of course, he's one of the many Republicans who has decided to step down, or been asked to. You know, you've got Rumsfeld, you've got Millman, you've got quite a few people who are moving around. Robert, did Ken Millman make a genuine hard play for the black vote, and did it work?
Well, I think the results basically speak for themselves, that it did not work, obviously, to the extent that the Republicans wanted to. I think his stepping down was more for his own reasons rather than him being forced out. There's usually a lot of turnover around this time anyway. But I think you have to take a look, while we're talking about the black vote, you have to take a look also at Michael Steele in Maryland. And Robert Trainum mentioned that they're talking about him possibly becoming becoming RNC chairman. There you had a case, obviously, where he's the a black Republican and didn't get a whole lot of support from black Democrats. So I mean, I think that's part of the mixture as well. And obviously, we'll see. I think Melman's statement about a couple of years ago, talking in a sense apologizing for the Southern strategy, was in a sense a good first step. And this is a multi-year approach that the Republicans have to take for this.
Callie, apologizing for the Southern strategy, essentially meaning using race, Republicans using race as a wedge issue. Do we think that the Republican Party, given that it hasn't made that many inroads on the black vote, is going to keep trying?
I think they're going to keep trying, and I will give Melman a few points for getting out there and being in facing some tough audiences around this very question. So whether he was forced by the party or driven by himself to think that this is what the Republican Party ought to be doing in terms of outreach to black voters, he did do some things. Now, having said that, obviously, all we have to do is look at those political ads. And so many of them, mostly by Republicans, were really race-based. And whether they were in the South or not, let's not even talk about the Southern strategy. Again, I live in Massachusetts, and I can tell you that the subtext of the ads from Carrie Healey's campaign, she who was opposing Deval Patrick for the governorship here, had a racial subtext. And that's just the bottom line. That's where folks go when they think that if they're desperate and they think that they can get the attention of white voters in a way that they can't by talking about other issues. Now, to his credit, Deval Patrick here just tried to rise above that and not deal with it. But in fact, it still is a part of the subtext.
Yvonne, I mean, do you think at this point the black vote is still in play, or what would make it in play?
I think it still is in play. We talked about this a little last week, and I think looking at the Baltimore Sun, they reported that Steele got 25% of the black vote, which in real terms, that's not a lot, but that is a large number of black people in Maryland who did vote. I think last go around, Bush would have wished to have that type of number.
That's right.
I think that what we're looking at, Cardin, however, got more of it was more of a split between white votes. Voters and Steele wasn't able to recoup, and therefore win the race. I think that, as I said last week, and I'm going to say again, I think that it's just a matter of chipping away. I think that you have people like Steele, who he is charismatic, but he is also a social conservative, which falls in line with a lot of what black people stand for. He's a former seminarian, he's Catholic, he's pro-choice and all of that. So certainly that does rub some people the wrong way. But for other people, it falls right in line with their own belief systems. I think that the Republicans would be better served to start going into communities and really talking about what they're about. I think they still have a very hands-off approach. They want to talk from, the pulpit, so to speak, and they're not getting down into the communities where people are. I don't think they'll ever get 70%, not in my lifetime, but certainly in selected elections with the right candidate, they could certainly get more voters than they have been getting.
Most Republican candidates would love to get as much as 25%, and I think the problem with you hit the nail on the head. Part of the problem with Steele was that you had that Eastern Shore vote, which has certain shall we say Southern sensibilities, and where they usually go Republican, they did not go for Brother Steele this time.
That's interesting. Well, I want to move on to another serious topic. We've all seen the Rodney King tape, and now there's another taped beating. The FBI is investigating the Los Angeles Police Department. And let's listen to a little bit of tough tape of officers repeatedly punching a suspect in the face while he cries out that he can't breathe.
I can't breathe.
Go.
I can't breathe, please.
Get that off.
That was just a little snippet of the tape, the videotape. L.A. Police Chief William Bratton responded by addressing the media, and here's what he said about the incident.
As to whether the actions of the officer were appropriate in light of what he was experiencing, the totality of circumstances, that's what the investigation will hopefully determine.
Yvonne, in a way, it's tempting to just say, enough. There's been so many incidents over the years, whether it's Abner Louima or Amadou Diallo. What can people do? And those were both in New York. It's certainly not just an L.A. problem. But when faced with videotape or outrageous incidents, how should people respond at this point?
Well, I think that the best response is to try to find out as much information as possible. What always strikes me as surprising is that we hear the same rhetoric. Of course, I understand that the police chiefs can't just jump on one side or the other without all the information being gathered. But if anyone who saw this film on YouTube saw the man was already down, he was already subdued, and he was being repeatedly punched. Granted, he was no choir boy, but that does not seem like it falls in line with any police protocol that I'm familiar with. And I think that once these issues get to juries, this is where you start talking about race and we start talking about perception of people. We have to get to the bottom of saying the police are not always right, that there is a protocol, there are standards of procedure they're supposed to follow, and when they start falling outside of that, whether that's a traffic stop or a gang leader, that they have to be held accountable. And I don't think we're quite there yet, and that's why I think we continue to see these type of incidents over and over and over.
Robert, you know, many times many times people involved in these incidents are people who are not, as Yvonne said, choir boys. How does that affect the whole? One thing that I've heard, for example, is that Black people should just stop talking about, you know, incidents that involve criminals. Why not talk about the good things about the Black community? Is it important to still fight these battles or to at least examine what happens in cases when, say, the person who may be on the losing end of a nightstick is not a choir boy?
Absolutely. First of all, just as citizens, we should be concerned if it looks like there's any kind of an abuse of power, whether it's a law enforcement or not. At the same time, I think it's not a bad idea to try and give the police the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you've got you mentioned a couple of the incidents in New York with Abner Louima. It was very clear that it was it wasn't just police misconduct. It was, you know, criminal, brutal behavior there. Amadou Diallo was this horrific tragedy involving somebody who was basically a choir boy, a poor immigrant who was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think what we found out, though, from the Rodney King situation is that you sometimes can't always believe everything that you see just in the context of what the tape says, what the videotape says. You don't know exactly what's going on in the few minutes before and so forth. From what I saw on this, I'm obviously dubious as to the actions of the police, but the only thing you can really do is just let the investigation play out.
Callie?
Well, what really distresses me is that for every one of these incidents caught on camera, I have to believe that there's much more going on that's not caught on camera. And that, to me, is the issue. It's about time now for the LAPD, which, by the way, has been under a consent decree to investigate and pay attention to these kinds of issues, to step up and say, look, you know, obviously this is a problem that is really deeply rooted in our ranks, and we have to look at this and say, no matter what happened before or after, the fact that the man was down at the moment of when the camera caught him is really not correct, period. And what does that say to the rest of the citizenry that the first words out of your mouth are, well, we better check and see what's going on? This is just wrong. Then you can say to me afterwards, after you've acknowledged that this is wrong and this clearly is out of bounds, to say, all right, well, maybe we'll find out what else is going on. And yeah, this guy wasn't a choir boy. But that has nothing to do with it. And I think that as citizens, we have to also be concerned about the fact that I believe that for every one you capture on camera, there's nine going on you didn't see. And that's pretty scary.
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask all of you this. Is there a way to change the dynamic that sometimes occurs between the African-American community or communities of color and the police? People have tried community policing, things like that. Robert, briefly.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at where New York was a few years ago after the Louima and Diallo incidents versus where it is now where Ray Kelly has worked overtime, you know, to go out and make himself a figure in the Black community, visiting Black churches almost every weekend. The relations between the Black community and the police in New York, I think, are about as good as they've been in years.
Yvonne?
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think community policing and those sort of things that get the police into people's faces outside of conflicts is certainly helpful, but that's about us using resources and wanting to do that. I also think the rhetoric has to change as well. As Callie said, when these things come up, we shouldn't just automatically jump and say, well, let's review the tape. At some point, you can have a temperate response that just says the tape doesn't look good, but we're going to go further with an investigation rather than just take the neutral road. Well, we're just going to investigate. People want to hear some accountability, and right now, a lot of these police chiefs, that's not what you're hearing from the onset.
Callie?
Community policing is definitely the answer. Recently here in Massachusetts, there was a profile of a police captain, the guy who's now going to take over Boston's police, who has really made inroads with the Latino community by being available, by going out to not churches but also community organizations, and really coming from, he's an old Irish captain, this wasn't his community, but making the kind of inroads that say, listen, we can have a relationship and it doesn't have to be an antagonistic one. We can work together to reduce the crime that I know you want to see get away. So I think in those communities where there is real effort and there is some top-down saying this is what the way that we're going to approach the community, there can be change.
All right. Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. Yvonne Bino, author of the book Stand and Deliver, and Robert George of the New York Post. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.